snow after midnight for northern New Hampshire, lows from around 20 to lower 30s. This is NHPR.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Granite State headlines this week focused on a mix of major stories, from new hopes for highway rest stops to eyes glued on those bearded Red Sox.
Smog primarily comes from pollution out of car tailpipes and power plant emissions, and it's at its worst on hot summer days. But in New Hampshire, smoggy days peaked in the summer of 1988 with 36 poor air quality days and have been declining slowly ever since.
You know, last election was pretty interesting. It was the first time that we had two candidates for governor, both of whom opposed the death penalty. It's clear New Hampshire's not in love with the death penalty. As Justice Murphy said, there's a trend. Seven states in the past 7 years have abolished the death penalty.
Farmers markets, farm stands, value-added kinds of agriculture, where there's a role for the department to help the producers do a better job of presenting and marketing their crops, informing consumers about the availability of the crops that are coming off New Hampshire farms. And the department has really stepped up its work.
Walmart or McDonald's or whomever, someone will be able to sponsor a rest area, have a sign there to generate some money, and it's been estimated that as much as $200 or maybe a little more $1,000 a year could come in from these sponsorships.
Jammed him on the mound. Adam Wainwright says, everybody stay away, and it drops.
That was NHPR Sam Evans-Brown on improving air quality data. State Representative Rennie Cushing promoting a new effort to repeal capital punishment. Former Commissioner Steve Taylor wishing the Department of Agriculture a happy 100th birthday. House Minority Leader Gene Chandler on possible corporate naming rights at rest areas. And Joe Buck of Fox TV broadcasting the first night of the World Series. But one of the biggest stories of the week involved continued frustration over healthcare.gov, the site for the Affordable Care Act's insurance marketplaces. This week, New Hampshire Democratic U.S. Senator Gene Shaheen urged the Obama administration to extend the March 31st deadline by which Americans must carry health insurance. Shaheen said, given continued troubles with the website, people should be given more time. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. We want your thoughts about the headlines of the week. Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. Our guests for this week's Roundup are Josh Rogers, senior political reporter here at NHPR. And Josh, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Laura.
Also with us, Ben Lubsdorf, staff reporter of the Concord Monitor, covering New Hampshire politics and state government. Ben, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, as always, good to have you.
Hi, good morning, Laura.
Well, and Josh, let me start with you, but I want to hear from everybody. On Tuesday, Senator Shaheen addressed ongoing problems with the health exchange's signups. What did she say, Josh, and why did this get so much attention?
Well, she said that due to technical problems with the website, that it might be prudent to support an extension of the enrollment deadline beyond the end of March. You know, it's significant because she's one of a number of Democrats. She sent that letter out, but since then, other Democrats, perhaps not coincidentally, a lot of them either from red states or facing reelection in 2014, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Kay Hagan in North Carolina, and Mark Begich in Alaska, also signed on to potentially dragging out that extension. Joe Manchin of West Virginia has gone a step farther. He actually says we should delay the individual mandate. You know, it's a recognition that the rollout of so-called Obamacare has not been smooth technically. A lot of it was obscured for a little bit by the government shutdown, but there's a lot of scrutiny now, and the technical problems are potentially quite large, and, you know, we don't know how far they go. So I don't think it's not a coincidence, though, I think that most of these folks are up for re-election in 2014.
Well, and in her letter, which I read to the president, Josh, she takes great pains to say, you know, the Affordable Care Act is great and it's going to help so many people and so forth, but let's give people a little more time.
She did, and there's videotape that was taken by a Republican advocacy group of somebody approaching her, thanking her for supporting this this delay, and then asking, well, have you thought about going farther? And in that video, you can watch her. She says, no, you know, without the individual mandate, it's not going to work. you know, this issue obviously isn't going away, and there's a lot more to this story. And, you know, on a smaller note, in the rollout in New Hampshire, we're still having a sort of back and forth about how to award some of the consumer assistance money, money that was held up by Republicans in the legislature. There was an RFP process soliciting vendors to help market the plan, a couple million dollars involved. There was a vote. Then there was a decision made that that vote shouldn't stand because perhaps there hadn't been a scrupulous following of federal standards for awarding that money. And so there were more those proposals had to be resubmitted today. So there are a lot of glitches up and down the food chain on this.
Yeah. Todd Bookman, our health reporter, did a report on that. And to you, I think, Dean Spiliota, so a little bit more on what Josh mentioned. Democrat Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Republican Johnny Isaacson of Georgia, leading this bipartisan effort for a so-called transition year. In other words, the individual mandate wouldn't kick in at all next year. It was supposed to kick in by 2014. Gene Shaheen said, no, I'm not going that far. How come?
Right. Well, yeah, I think there's concern among Democrats, and there has been for some time, the more the implementation of the Affordable Care Act is pushed back, the more opportunity there is for Republicans to scuttle it, for there to be other obstacles put in place of the implementation of the law. You know, it's interesting. Marketplace exchanges are working better in states where the states themselves took responsibility for setting up the marketplaces. California is one example, but New Hampshire is depending on a federal marketplace, so that's problematic for people in our state who want to sign up. You know, it's interesting. I think this was an important step for Jean Shaheen. Again, as Josh said, not coincidental that she and I think it's five or six other senators who are up for reelection in the Senate got behind this. And you know, I think there's a concern among Democrats that they went to bat for President Obama in Congress, and they now have egg on their face, and it's given Republicans an opportunity to say, "See, we told you so," and this is just the beginning. I mean, this is literally the first thing that has come up for implementation, and it's been realistically a bit of a disaster. So, you know, I don't think it's Gene Shaheen's nature to kind of call for that sort of a radical delay, and she typically is measured, as we saw in the letter. But the ground is now fertile, I think, for Democrats to speak out more forcefully for some changes, just because it has been so problematic.
I have a question for you too, Ben, but let me also invite our listeners to join us. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. We want to hear from you. We're following some of the top stories of the week. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange. And Ben Lubsdorf, so we've been talking about Democrat Jean Shaheen. What about Republican Kelly Ayotte? What's she been saying about problems with the rollout and the possibilities for delay of the mandate?
Well, it's no surprise that Kelly Ayotte's been much more forceful, much more critical of this rollout. Of course, hating on Obamacare is a pretty constant message now for Republicans, and Kelly Ayotte is part of that. She would probably support extending the open enrollment. She'd probably support delaying the individual. She would support delaying the individual mandate. She would support repealing the law entirely. And that's not a change for her. But, you know, Republicans are in this position where this is now the story, the rollout that's been botched in many ways, the website that isn't working. And this could have been the story for all of October. But because of the shutdown, as Josh mentioned, it got obscured for a few weeks. And that's a shutdown that polls show voters blame Republicans more than Democrats for. So if you're Kelly Ayotte, you're someone who wasn't supportive of the shutdown, wasn't supportive of the path that the House Republicans took trying to get Obamacare delayed or defunded in exchange for keeping the government open, you got to be pretty upset that that was the message that people were talking about for a few weeks instead of talking about these websites not working.
Let's take some calls if we could, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email us if you'd like, exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. You can post a comment there. And Dorothy's calling in from Leominster. Hi, Dorothy. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. I just wanted to comment that the problem with exchanges, to me, is perfectly understandable because the states that said, yeah, we'll go ahead and do our exchanges, they're not having the problems because they had 3 years to develop the whole thing. But the states, including New Hampshire, who either delayed saying whether they would do it or just outright declined, made the federal government do it, and the federal government only had about a year to to do it by the time the decisions were made, and they didn't have the time to get it all done.
Go ahead, Dorothy.
I just can't see that the Republicans can say, well, this is bad for the exchange, because we just delayed everything so that we could make sure it wouldn't work.
Thanks for the call, Dorothy. Dean Spiliotis?
Sure. And Dorothy's comments get back to what I said a moment ago. You know, one of the narratives out there for the problems that we're seeing with the exchange is the one that Dorothy has just articulated, that, you know, the states are doing better because they decided they were going to take on the burden themselves, and they set about building these sites early on. We have had, you know, roughly 3 years.
Better, but not perfect.
But not perfect, but much more smoothly than the national exchange. So the narrative goes that, you know, Republicans in Congress were obstructionist. There was tremendous uncertainty for the contractors and for the government agencies responsible for implementing the national exchanges. And as a result, they just didn't have the time to do this properly. It was not a function of bureaucratic malfeasance. It was a function of the political environment in Congress being very uncertain. And that's why the national exchanges are kind of behind the eight ball. So, yeah, Dorothy is articulating certainly one of the arguments about why we're having these problems now.
Dorothy, thanks a lot for the call. And, gentlemen, we talked about New Hampshire's two U.S. senators and how they've been positioning on this. Josh Rogers, there was a new UNH poll on both senators, how Granite Staters feel about them. What about Senator Shaheen?
Well, generally positive. The number escapes me off the top of my head, but, you know, certainly she's looking in a year out from election. She's looking to be in strong shape versus, you know, her two opponents for the moment, at least, Jim Rubins of Aetna and Karen Testerman of Franklin. You know, Jean Shaheen has been through a lot of these polls. I mean, I don't know how many UNH polls she must have appeared in by this point. And people have a pretty, you know, New Hampshire voters know who she is. You know, those that are comfortable with her, and she's only lost one election in her political career, you know what they're getting. Those who dislike her know what they're getting as well. So she doesn't tend to be subject to vast swings, but by any measure, she's looking to be in a strong position a year out from election.
And Josh, I noticed that the poll asked about Shaheen versus Rubins. Shaheen versus Charlie Bass, the former 2nd District Congressman, who hasn't even decided to run yet.
Yes. I mean, you know, you populate a poll with plausible opponents. Charlie Bass had made some noises about considering it. You know, Scott Brown made noises about considering it. You know, so far it's Jim Rubins and Karen Testerman.
Any noises from Charlie Bass since we talked last time about this, Ben?
No, he's gone pretty quiet since his announcement a while back that he was seriously considering this. And he indicated at that point that you would be hearing from him when he had made a decision. And he stuck to that. He hasn't made a decision yet.
All right. Couple more numbers from this poll that I want to follow up with you all on. But we have to take a short break just to check in real quickly to see how our fall membership drive is going.
And the work of Laura Kanoy is only made possible with listener support. Please give as generously as you can to keep programs like The Exchange coming your way. The NHPR Fund Drive, it ends tonight. We have, though, $39,000 left to raise to meet the challenge. When we meet that goal, we'll earn a $15,000 challenge grant. That's big, from a group of passionate NHPR fans. Help make this the last day of the drive by making sure we meet this challenge. You can do it when you make a pledge now at nhpr.org. I'm Sarah Ashworth, and here is Keith Shields.
And $15,000 is a lot of money. It would really go to supporting our local reporters and The Exchange and word of mouth. But $39,000, that's a really daunting number. So let's make it a little easier. It's really just one pledge at a time. How about if we can raise $3,000 during The Exchange? That will help us stay on track to finish the fundraiser by the end of the day today. It's also the last time that the listeners can call in and pledge their support during The Exchange and during our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, a weekly segment we started out of listener feedback about 7 months ago. It's become really popular and a nice complement to the Diane Rehm Friday roundups. We take your thoughts and suggestions seriously, and now we're hoping that you can fund these new ideas. 1-888-805-6477 or support us online at nhpr.org.
And it is so important that you support us right now. When we meet our goal this drive, we will earn a $15,000 challenge grant from NHPR members, including Deb and Andy Westwood, Bill Chapman, Penny Patu, and Milo Pike. That $15,000 will pay for 87 future hours of NPR News on NHPR, but we must meet this goal to earn the challenge, so please give as generously as you can right now. Pick up the phone, show your support for the exchange and the Friday News Roundup by calling 1-888-805-6477 or going online to nhpr.org.
Sarah, a great start, $2,400 to go. How about a gift of $20 a month as a sustainer, and we will thank you with the Blue Nano brand Bluetooth speaker. It can be used with any Bluetooth-enabled device. All you do is you switch it on, and your phone or your tablet finds it. And, you know, it's kind of amazing, Sarah. It is really the size of a golf ball. I think it looks like a little mini salt shaker. And the amount of sound that can be produced from something like that is just amazing. So that's yours for a gift of $20 a month as a sustainer, or a one-time gift of $240 when you give us a call and support New Hampshire Public Radio. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
We have all been coveting this little speaker all morning long. It can be yours with that pledge at $20 a month. We know we have many listeners who have their radios on all day. Some even keep it on all night as they sleep. Maybe you, though, only listen at certain parts of the day, like during your commute or as you make dinner. But I bet you tune in every day. Maybe you check out nhpr.org to catch up on your favorite stories or stories that you missed. Your favorite programs, your favorite moments, all of these on NHPR are made possible thanks to you when you contribute to our fall fund drive. And I bet The Exchange is one of your favorite programs. And if so, we want to hear from you now. We want you to support the program. Call in, make a pledge. Let us know that The Exchange is important to you and that you really appreciate the Friday News Roundup every Friday. This is your chance to show your support for The Exchange. It's a great program to support. Call 1-888-805-6477 or support it at nhpr.org.
NHPR's Last Day Member Challenge is well underway. Your contribution right now, joined with others, is how we meet this ambitious goal and raise the rest of the money that we need to raise by the end of the day. $2,400 to go during the exchange will keep us on track to do that, and we'll earn an additional $15,000 if we make the challenge by the end of the day. So you have until 7 o'clock tonight. You have until 10 o'clock to raise the additional $2,400. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Listener support makes up just over 41% of the total revenue for NHPR. Getting more members, just 1% or 2% even, would make a huge difference in our ability to serve you even better. And that's what we want to do here. We want to keep bringing you The Exchange, so support it now. Call 1-888-805-6477 or make a pledge of support at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electric, now offering electrical repair and service in addition to furnaces, boilers, and water heaters, online at justcallheritage.com. From Kimball Union Academy, a boarding and day school for students in grades 9 to 12 near Dartmouth College in Meriden, New Hampshire, an environment designed for learning, KUA.org. And the Rotary Club of Concord presenting Magic of Movies and Television November 1st through the 3rd at Concord City Audi, with tunes performed by Rotarians and friends, ConcordNHRotary.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and we're covering some of the top stories that made headlines this week. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Joining me for the roundup, Ben Lubsdorf of the Concord Monitor, Josh Rogers, senior political reporter at NHPR, and Dean Spiliotis, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Again, 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us with your questions and comments. And Josh, just wrapping up this new UNH poll, there were some interesting numbers about Governor Maggie Hassan. What did we find out?
Well, very favorable numbers for her. 57% approval, 14% disapprove, and a net favorability of 44%, which, you know, sort of in striking distance of what Governor Lynch used to enjoy, and so she's looking good as well. I mean, the poll doesn't really spell out precisely how she's achieved this, but you know, good for her, I guess. And it also spells potential problems for the GOP in the absence of a strong opponent for Governor Hassan. You know, a strong gubernatorial run tends to, you know, have good coattails. And so, you know, if you can't keep it within a 10% margin as a sort of rule of thumb, then, you know, if the governor of either party wins more than 10%, then that really has down ticket implications. And, you know, we'll see in some of the state house races, you know, redistricting that took place in 2010, you know, may mitigate that somewhat. But it'll be interesting to see, absent changes, what these numbers mean.
Ben and Dean, go ahead, Ben.
Well, and just to expand on what Josh just said about the coattails effect, you look back at 2006, and that was a year where Jim Coburn, a one-term state representative, was the Republican nominee for governor. John Lynch destroyed him, ran up a huge landslide, and not coincidentally, Democrats win the executive council, the House, and the Senate. Now, there were national factors at work as well in 2006, but Republicans certainly want to avoid something like that. That's why you've seen them working so hard to get a top candidate to challenge either Jean Shaheen or Maggie Hassan.
And they haven't gotten anybody yet, have they? Now, it's still early, in fairness.
Not yet. You know, it's not quite as early in the Senate race. There's a lot more fundraising that needs to go in there. You could start a little later in the governor's race. But, you know, you don't have a top candidate yet, I think, for governor, certainly. And that is something that's got people worried.
Yeah, who's in there, Dean, to challenge Maggie Hassan at this point? Did you want to jump on that?
Well, there's a few people who have said that they're looking at running. Former State Representative Frank Amiro, who ran in 2010, finished fourth in the Republican primary. George Lambert, who is current state representative from Litchfield. And Brad Cook, who's a Manchester lawyer and sort of longtime friend of Warren Rubman, the former U.S. senator. So those are three people who have talked about running. None of them have much statewide name recognition yet, so it's not clear how they'll do in a campaign against Maggie Hassan.
Yeah,
right,
I
was thinking more in terms of who has decided that they're not going to run for governor. We've had a number of different people step up and say they're not going to run. Andy Sanborn, who's been sort of an outspoken Republican in the Senate, was someone who people had mentioned he decided he was not going to run. That got a fair bit of publicity. Certainly, as both Josh and Ben said, these are good numbers for the Democratic Party in the state. Polling data like this can have the effect of, while it's only a snapshot and we're still a year away, it can have the effect of kind of discouraging opponents from getting in if they think it's going to be an obvious victory. And as I've said many times, I think both Shaheen and Hassan are going to be strong candidates. Hassan has benefited from not having any real kind of hot button issues. And we had the casino gambling debate, but that sort of kind of fell by the wayside eventually. And then they ended on a high note with that budget agreement. So the polling data also shows, I think, that a majority of New Hampshireites think the state's on the right track. We weathered the last recession better than most places. Unemployment was typically a few points lower than the national average. So, things can change, but, she's in pretty good shape right now.
Well,
and certainly governors seeking second terms in New Hampshire, in the two-year term, they tend to get them. Only Craig Benson in the last,
80-some-odd years,
was denied a second term. So, you know, on paper, things are certainly looking pretty good for the governor.
Well, one more political story for all of you. And then, Josh, I did want to ask you about that event you went to yesterday announcing a new effort to once again try to repeal the death penalty. But, Ben, to you first. Okay, so while the governor's race is pretty quiet, congressional races, both for CD1 and CD2, have several people competing, including, Ben, possibly another name added to the second congressional district ballot. Who is it that might jump in, that Republicans maybe are hoping will jump in?
Well, this is a report from the New Hampshire Union Leader that State Representative Mary Linda Garcia is thinking about running in the 2nd District. She hasn't publicly confirmed this at all, but she's not denying it either. She is a fourth-term state representative. She's from Salem. She's on the House Finance Committee, which is a pretty important committee, obviously. She is someone who has been identified by the National Republican Party as a rising star. In fact, when the Republican National Committee named its first four people in its Rising Star program this year, she was one of them. So it's not a huge surprise that, given the way Annie Custer's poll numbers are looking in the 2nd District, that more Republicans are getting into this race. That UNH poll showed her tied with Gary Lambert, who's the only Republican who's announced he'll run against Custer. Bill O'Brien, the former speaker, had been gearing up to run in that race. He decided not to run after he got a new job, perhaps not coincidentally after he had a pretty poor fundraising quarter. So if Garcia gets into the race, you'll have a contested primary, and she might not be the last one to get in. That's a race that's going to be looking perhaps more attractive to Republicans than either of the statewide races.
Well, and Dean, given that she was dubbed a rising star by the National Party, you know, she's young, attractive, Latino, female, you know, it sounds like a race that the National Republican Party might dump some money into.
Absolutely. That's what I was about to say. You know, the Republican National Committee in their summer meeting in Boston labeled her as one of these rising stars in the party because of all the demographic features you mentioned as well and her age. It's a really good opportunity for the party to kind of begin to rebrand itself in the state. So I do think that if she gets into the race, she will probably draw some outside money in a way that some of these other candidates might not. So I think it's a good opportunity, much in the same way we've talked about Dan Innes running in the first Republican as Republican in the first congressional district. These are opportunities for the party to kind of rebrand itself in the state.
All right. Well, enough politics, gentlemen. Turning back to the legislature, where I guess that's about politics too, but not necessarily elections. I also want to invite our listeners to join us at 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Josh, you attended an event just yesterday announcing a new effort to once again try to repeal the death penalty. Rennie Cushing, leader of the effort, said, quote, "I think New Hampshire has come to the conclusion that New Hampshire can live without the death penalty." Now, why does Representative Cushing feel that way? What do you think, Josh? What's changed?
Well, he said that, and that seems to be a tagline that this coalition is using, that New Hampshire can live without the death penalty. I suspect we're going to be hearing a lot more of that. But, you know, Rennie Cushing was speaking to the fact that the last gubernatorial race featured candidates from both parties, nominees, Ovid La Montaigne, the Republican, and, of course, Maggie Hassan, the Democrat, who said they'd be comfortable repealing the death penalty. That hasn't been the case in New Hampshire ever, as far as according to Representative Cushing. And you look at the past two, you know, big efforts to repeal the death penalty. One took place when Jeanne Shaheen was governor, and you probably recall this, that it passed and then she vetoed it, and the Pope even got involved. And
I do remember
she cited
that.
The murders up in Colebrook, the Carl Draga incident, as being crimes so heinous that, you know, we need this on the books. And then in 2009, this made it through the House. It didn't make it through the Senate. Governor Lynch was always said that he would veto it, that he favored our death penalty statute. And, you know, the politics of this are interesting. You do have this coalition that is this sort of potential kind of hands across the water. You have real liberals who support it. You have a lot of social conservative people who disagree with this on religious grounds. You had the state's two bishops, Bishop Labashi of the Manchester Diocese and Bishop Hirschfeld of the Episcopal Diocese in support. You had former Superior Court Chief Judge Murphy speaking out on this, who was the chair of the Death Penalty Commission.
It was a study commission a couple years back, yeah.
And, you know, they drew a big crowd to the LOB lobby yesterday when they were rolling out this repeal. This is going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, the sort of political overlay is interesting. I mean, obviously, the law enforcement folks very much favor our current law. We have Michael Addison on death row. We could get a decision from the New Hampshire Supreme Court anytime soon. And so there's a lot going on. And, of course, like, let's not forget that the Addison prosecution was a big part of Kelly Ayotte's run for office in 2010. And, you know, as people sort of anticipate that in 2016 we may be looking at a Senate race between Maggie Hassan and Kelly Ayotte, you know, there's a lot here, you know, layered on top of the fundamental issue about whether or not the death penalty is a just or fiscally prudent, which is another argument that they're making that just costs too much money, that $5 million is going to be spent on the Addison case and that money could be spent elsewhere.
Wow.
This is going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, there's so much there in what you said, Josh, not just the history and who's coming together this time, but I hadn't even thought about the politics of this, that murmurings that Governor Hassan, who's against the death penalty, might run for U.S. Senate in 2016 against Kelly Ayotte, who, as you said, partly
She ran campaign ads
about, you know, being tough on crime and favoring the death penalty. Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, it strikes me that we'll be having this debate next year on the death penalty. It'll be just 3 years after New Hampshire expanded its death penalty. In 2011, the legislature passed a bill, and Governor Lynch signed it, making murders during home invasion robberies eligible for the death penalty in response to that horrible case out of Mount Vernon. And so it's sort of striking to me that we've had these two efforts in the recent past to repeal the death penalty. Then we expanded the death penalty. now opponents of the death penalty think that they have a good shot at repealing it. And it looks like they may have the votes in the House based on those last two efforts at repeal. The Senate is another question, and it looks like that's going to be a pretty divided Senate when it comes to this issue, and not necessarily divided on party lines. This is, as Josh said, an issue that has a lot of religious overtones as well.
Yeah, it is interesting, these different coalitions coming together. Also, Dean, the fact that in an era when so much of our political discussion in any state, New Hampshire included, is nationalized, this is really a state-by-state thing, isn't it?
Yeah, typically. And there actually have been a number of changes, I think, in over a dozen states in recent years. A lot of it is driven by changes in DNA technology. And these are typically states where there's a much larger death row population. I think, as we noted, Michael Addison is essentially the only person on death row in the state. So the larger debate nationally is a function of kind of the sort of, making sure you get it right and kind of the uncertainty of a lot of the cases for people who are currently on death row. And so, this is a slightly different dynamic. And we haven't really heard a lot of kind of national death penalty back and forth in recent years. But there are these changes at the state level, and it sounds like it's coming back around in New Hampshire.
Well, yeah. And in an age when sort of distrust of government runs high, sure, and there's sort of libertarian strain that exists, in arguably in increasing numbers within the GOP, it'd be interesting to see the way individual lawmakers choose to engage this.
Yeah, Dean, I wanted to ask you on a completely different topic. Some good news this week about New Hampshire air quality. Nice to hear good news. In 2013, the EPA says New Hampshire experienced only 3 days with poor air quality due to ozone or smog. To what is EPA attributing this good news, Dean?
Couple of different factors. Cars are generally burning cleaner now. Power plants in the state are being more frequently run on natural gas, which is cleaner. They're crediting the cap and trade on emissions to some extent. So you have a number of these factors kind of all going together. It's interesting. In 1988, we had 36 days of poor air quality.
Wow, it's a lot.
But actually, I learned that the low has been in 2009 and 2011, in which we only had 2 days. But still, you go from mid-30s down to 2 or 3 days a year. Clearly, that's a good thing, and it seems to be a trend. So it peaked in 88, and now we've sort of trended down almost to zero. And it is a function, I think, of these different kind of different type of technology in terms of what's being burned in the air for fuel.
Well, and it was a story that caught our attention this week. Also, another story that caught the attention of the Exchange staff came from the Nashua Telegraph. A designer at a company called Bressler Group in Philadelphia has redesigned all 50 state flags, including New Hampshire's. This after New Hampshire's flag was rated, quote, among the 10 worst state flags in America by a group that studies flags. If you want to look at New Hampshire's current flag and the proposed redesign, which, as I've heard, is not going anywhere, we've put it on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Again, you can check out our Facebook page to look at the proposed redesign and, of course, our current flag. We're going to take a short break now and check in with our fall membership drive.
Thank you, Laura. I'm Keith Shields, executive producer of the show you're listening to right now, and we're asking for your financial support now at 1-888-805-6477 because NHPR members support the Exchange. See, you make it possible when you give to New Hampshire Public Radio when you call 1-888-805-6477 or you make a contribution online at nhpr.org. And joining me is News Director Sarah Ashworth.
And we have $2,300 left to raise in the next 20 minutes or so. When we do that, we stay on track to end this goal. The hope is to end the fund drive today. We can only do that if we stay on track throughout the day, though. So we need $2,300 by 10 o'clock today. Help us get there. Show your support for the Exchange, the experience. Laura Canoy is a veteran reporter here in New Hampshire. She brings something special to the Friday News Roundup every Friday. Her experience shines through. You can support the work of Laura Canoy and her team of producers by calling 1-888-805-6477 or making a pledge at nhpr.org.
That's right, Sarah. You know, what I love about this new weekly segment we started, the New Hampshire Friday News Roundup, there are so many stories out there that, you know, really we've always wanted to cover, but they may not warrant a full hour of discussion. This allows us to talk about those important news items, but we also get into those quirky stories like we just heard Laura talking about. You know, a company is proposing a new flag for New Hampshire. Hampshire because they say that we have one of the 10 worst flags in the union. If you've become a fan of the Roundup, or if you're just like a longtime fan of Laura Kanoy and the Exchange, this is your time to support New Hampshire Public Radio. This is the last time to support the Exchange during our fall fund drive. So call us at 1-888-805-6477 or make a contribution online at nhpr.org.
Can you support Laura Kanoy at $10 a month? I think you can. I think it's worth it to you to support the programming on the Exchange. $10 a month. When you give at the $10 a month level, you'll become a card-carrying member of NHPR. What that means is you will get the NHPR member card. It comes with a booklet listing all of the restaurants and cultural attractions around the state and around the region that honor the card. It's just our way of saying thank you for supporting the station. There are lots of really great two-for-one deals that I'm sure you're going to use. Support the Exchange at $10 a month and you'll get that NHPR member card. You can do it by calling 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
It is really a great gift. The way I always think about it, Sarah, it's $20 for a year or $10 a month. And if you use it maybe three or four times or five or six times at restaurants around the state, you're really getting your money back.
You make it back.
So it's a great deal, and you're supporting the radio station. But many to your listeners are also choosing to support New Hampshire Public Radio with a gift of, say, $1,200 or more. It's a great way to support the station, especially during this membership campaign. And the money that you give will ensure that NHPR will be here for you and all of New Hampshire. So if you can, at $100 a month, support New Hampshire Public Radio, make a gift online at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
And you, as our listener, we think of you as part of our community. You have an opportunity to call in and be part of the conversation every day on the Exchange. That is great access to lawmakers around the state. And today, weigh in on the events of the week. You get a chance to do that when you listen to the Exchange, when you participate in the Exchange. And right now, we need you to participate in this fall fund drive. We have $2,300 to raise in the next 17 minutes or so to stay on track. We'd love to end the fund drive today. We can only do that with your help, though. So make a pledge now. Call 1-888-805-6477. You can also take just a couple of minutes, make a secure pledge online at nhpr.org.
One of the things that I love about the Exchange is the listeners who call in every day because, you know, they provide so many different angles that we may not have ever thought of when we're planning, we're in our planning meetings. They call in with the questions that really challenge our listeners, or they provide a perspective of what's happening in their lives. They call in every day and make a good show a great show. Now we're asking you to call in for a different reason. It's to support the show and support the station. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And we have $2,300 to raise here in the next 16 minutes or so. We can do that with your help. This is your chance to support the Exchange in the Friday News Roundup. Let us know that you listen every day and it matters to you. Make a pledge right now at nhpr.org, and thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from People's United Bank, serving businesses of one and businesses of thousands in branches and online at peoples.com. From Company C, creating a lifestyle of colorful living with brightly colored area rugs, bedding, furniture, and home accents, retail store in Concord and online at companyc.com. And from New Hampton School, an innovative boarding and day school offering the International Baccalaureate Diploma, hosting an admissions open house November 2nd, newhampton.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and you can join our conversation as we cover some of the top stories of the week from New Hampshire's U.S. senators talking about a possible delay of next year's health insurance mandate. We've also looked at a new effort to repeal New Hampshire's death penalty law. You can join us on these stories and more at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Ben Lubsdorf, I wanted to kick this segment off with you, looking at the possibility of naming rights at New Hampshire highway rest stops. Now, just remind us, state rest areas kind of took a hit in the last couple of years.
That's correct. And there are 13 state highway rest areas. Two of them are in Hooksett. Those are the ones that there was the big groundbreaking this week on a large redevelopment of that whole area by the Common Man. That's a private lease of public space. That's sort of separate from this program. But of the other 11, four are closed, most due to budget reasons. And the rest aren't great. I mean, they're not great facilities. They have very limited offerings, a couple of vending machines, some bathrooms, and some brochures. And so there's been this idea floating around for a couple of years that maybe we can get sponsorships, naming rights. It's not a totally innovative idea. 14 states have programs like this. But there was legislation this year, and we heard from Gene Chandler, the House Minority Leader, at the top of the hour, talking about this. He was one of the people who helped craft this to get the ball rolling on a sponsorship program where the state would hire a company to design this program and sell naming rights to companies for these rest areas. And the money from that would go into the DOT budget, would go back into improving and operating these rest areas. The idea is that you can get a sponsor for, say, the rest area in Epsom on Route 4, which has been closed for a couple of years, and that rest area could reopen, be improved, and in return, the company would get quite a bit of advertising there. It's still pretty early in the process. They should be hiring this company to design the program by mid-2014. Then the program will get underway. It's a 3-year contract. But, you know, they're hoping that this can not solve all of the problems. It wouldn't be a huge amount of money. It wouldn't be like we're seeing at Hooks at the plans there for a very large full-service rest area. It wouldn't be anything like that. But it would be a start. And DOT obviously does not have a lot of new sources of funding coming
sure.
in. Gas tax isn't going anywhere. This is sort of a small bore thing, but something that really has implications for tourism.
Well, and it sounds like a win-win, right? I mean, the company makes out, but the state also makes out, so.
Well, and there are potential downsides because which companies do you let advertise? Could this harm New Hampshire's image? I know there are concerns out there about that, and these contracts will have to go through the executive council, so it's not a done deal, and there will probably be things there. But there are requirements in what was approved this week by a legislative committee to start the RFP process. Restrictions on what can be advertised there. No guns, no alcohol, no tobacco, no euthanasia, no political candidates.
Wait, no tobacco. That means you don't get any cigarette taxes.
Well, and no alcohol, so there's no revenue for state liquor stores either. But I think the idea is that they want something that will present a positive image for New Hampshire. And that'll be a big part of whether this program is controversial or not, I think, in the end, is whether you have McDonald's signing up or the common man, local companies or national companies or perhaps companies that people don't like very much.
Wow. Okay. So, Dean, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Bipartisan effort, it sounds like, and some potential there. And not a new idea. I mean, this is an era where everything's the, you know, the GM this and the Scott Long chemical that, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, that was what I wanted to mention was that this idea of selling naming rights or sponsorship has become so commonplace now. States and cities and other localities have found that this is a good way to raise revenue. And, you know, certainly anything that can be done to kind of improve the rest areas, open up the ones that have been closed. It's a good tourism opportunity if you have these welcome information centers running smoothly. And we have talked extensively over the past year about how DOT is strapped for funds. And funding has sort of fallen by the wayside with some of the legislative battles. So, you know, it's not a huge program. I think they're saying it may bring in a couple hundred thousand a year, but it's certainly a start. And it's one of these things where they just have to kind of figure out the parameters. But again, it's a pretty reasonable idea given how common it is now to have these sponsorships.
Josh, I wanted to follow up on another story that came by me this week, and that's the state legislature looking at setting up a fund for victims of the FRM scandal. Boy, this is a story that goes back a couple years, Josh. Can you just give us a little background before we talk about what happened this week?
Well, it is FRM, which stands for Financial Resources Mortgage, was a mortgage company in the Lakes region run by two men, Scott Farah, Donald Dodge. It was a Ponzi scheme, ultimately, it was something that was not, insufficiently handled by the state in terms of there were complaints made, there were violations of banking regulation, securities law, arguably there was sort of a turf war over who was to blame. Complaints were made directly to the Attorney General's office, and basically it fell through the cracks. And
there were two Attorney Generals involved as well,
yeah,
Ayotte and Delaney, right?
Well, Delaney at the end, there was a commission, the governor. This was a big political issue. It cost former bank commissioner Peter Hildreth his job. Mark Connolly, the securities bureau chief, resigned in protest. He felt that the governor's office and the attorney general were pinning it on the Securities Bureau. It was an issue that Paul Hodes tried to make a big campaign issue when he ran against Kelly Ayotte. There were thousands of emails that were released.
That's right. I forgot about
and
that.
And
yeah.
There was a commission that the governor formed that was chaired by then-State Senator Maggie Hassan to look at this. There were various findings about how the state fell down. It ended up with a lot of finger-pointing and victims of the scam, which, were out, millions of dollars in the aggregate. A lot of them were in – this went to a bankruptcy judge. It was very complicated. This was a concept that was been talked about ever since, basically, and this was a bill that was supported in the state Senate by Peter Bragdon and Lou D'Alessandro.
Bipartisan effort.
Made it through the Senate, was retained by the House over the summer in the Commerce Committee. There's no clear agreement on how to do this, if the money's around, does this set a dangerous precedent. It's coming out of the Commerce Committee with a tie vote, which is essentially a non-recommendation. It's sort of tough sledding, I think, for this bill because
again, this is a bill to set up a compensation fund for victims.
Compensation fund.
The state messed up. That's the argument.
Yes, that the state messed up. That's the argument. But there have been fights over where do you get the revenue? Do you get it from other security settlements? If we set up a fund for this, do we set up a fund for other things? There's some who believe that this was sort of a too good to be true investment, and that some of these people who lost money, were insufficiently careful with their investing. Donald Dodge and Scott Farrar are in prison, and the state definitely dropped the ball. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. The prognosis isn't looking so hot based on the vote out of committee.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's interesting. And interesting to hear you go back through that history, Josh. Dean, I wanted to quickly ask you about another story. The New Hampshire moose hunt ends on Sunday. And as we've talked about on this program, the moose population overall is way down. What are hunters noticing with the moose?
Well, basically, you have this sort of lottery each year for a set number of permits, kind of based on how they want to adjust the moose population. People enter the lottery from all over the country. It gets a lot of coverage. 281 hunters got permits this year. The bagging of moose is down a little bit. They think that the warmer weather, moose tend to sort of lay low when it's slightly warmer. It is now getting chillier. The most recent figures I saw said that I think 42% of the permitted hunters had taken moose at this point, down from 50% this time last year. I think the hunt ends. It's a 9-day hunt. It ends on October 27th.
Yeah, which is coming up.
So, sort of fairly typical, but a little bit below what it was last year.
Well, and we'd be remiss, Ben Loopsdorf, if we didn't talk about the Keene Pumpkin Festival. As we approach Halloween this week, last Saturday, the Guinness World Records folks agreed that Keene topped the world record again for, quote, most carved and lit pumpkins. And boy, Keene lit. I don't envy the person who has that job. 30,581, besting the earlier record set by Boston in 2006 of 30,128. Congratulations, Keene. Ben, just your thoughts on this whole giant tradition over there.
Well, good on Keene, I guess. They have a lot of pumpkins, and they're apparently pretty nice. What surprised me most about this story was that apparently this is a sort of pumpkin arms race among some small towns on who gets this award. You mentioned Boston. Of course, a town called Highwood, Illinois also has a large pumpkin festival. And I was surprised to learn, perhaps not surprised, that HGTV ran a whole special last year called Pumpkin Wars about Highwood and Keene and their sort of race to have a lot of pumpkins that are lit for, I think it's 5 whole minutes without blowing out is the standard for the Guinness Book of World Records. So
wow. Well, I hate to see the compost pile after this is all over.
I guess it keeps people out of trouble.
All right. Well, gentlemen, all of you, I do want to quickly check in with what you're going to be looking at next week. We here on The Exchange, by the way, are planning a program on all the conversation happening now about the Common Core education standards. That's coming up on November 4th, so we'll be working on that. Josh, how about you?
Well, I'll be sort of covering the waterfront, but we're working on a number of stories for later in November about looking back at the recession and where New Hampshire stands now project throughout the newsroom. So we're going to be getting going on that.
Interesting. Ben?
Well, we're entering the home stretch for city elections in New Hampshire. Election day is November 5th here in Concord, in Manchester, and in other cities. Concord, which I'm most familiar with, this is where I live. There's a lot of contested races and ward races, a three-way mayor's race. So I guess we'll be watching for any October surprise in the last week of campaigning.
That's right. We forget that there are off-year city elections in some New Hampshire communities.
Turnout isn't great in these elections, but, you know, you show up and you get to vote.
Dean, real quick.
The Medicaid expansion special session is going to be starting in November. And Gene Shaheen and Kelly Ayotte, both very involved in the marketplace exchanges and also on the budget conference committee that came out of the shutdown. So we're going to be hearing a lot about them as well.
All right. Well, happy Halloween, everybody. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is The Exchange on NHPR, checking in now with our fall membership drive.
And listening to NHPR makes your time more valuable, whether it's when you wake up, during your commute, or on the weekend. We create that value with listener contributions from people just like you. I'm Sarah Ashworth, and this is the Fall Fund Drive. Please give now at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. And here's Keith Shields with a little more.
Well, we're trying to stay on track, and in order to do that, we want to raise $2,000 in the next 4 minutes. We can do it. We've been sort of working very hard during our fall fund drive, meeting these goals so that we can stay on track, so that we can end the fundraiser on time. So $2,000, this is your last chance to support the exchange during the fall fund drive. So, you know, it's really the money goes everywhere, but by supporting us during the exchange, you're kind of like giving a little vote for us, that you're supporting us during the show that you value, that talks about New Hampshire news, that talks about those things that Granite Staters are talking about around the water cooler. 1-888-805-6477 or support us online at nhpr.org.
Your call to NHPR has never been more important. Your call will keep us on track to end this drive successfully. A successful drive will ensure a successful year of news and information and programs of the exchange coming your way on NHPR. We want to end the drive today. We need your help in order to do that, though. Please support the station. Support your listening of the exchange. Support the Diane Rehm Show. Call now 1-888-805-6477 or do it at nhpr.org.
And how about a gift of $20 a month? If so, we will thank you with one of our new thank you gifts. It's the Blue Nano brand Bluetooth speaker. It can be used with any Bluetooth-enabled device. It's really easy to use. You just switch it on and your phone or your tablet finds it. And the booming sound that comes out of something so small, the size of a golf ball, is just kind of mind-blowing. So it's yours for $20 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $240. If 9 people called in with that amount right now, we would make our goal and stay on track at 1-888-805-6477 or check out what this Bluetooth looks like at nhpr.org.
And we understand that you trust us to explore important nuances of stories so that you can better understand them. We also share your passion for learning, which is what drives us in this pursuit. And that's what drives Laura Kanoy and the Exchange producers every day. They want to find subjects and people that interest you and that you can learn from. Support a program like the Exchange. You're listening right now. I know you value the work that Laura Kanoy and the producers do. Now is your chance, though, to go from listening to the Exchange to supporting the Exchange. When you tune in next Monday, you'll know you're helping bring the Exchange to the airwaves. This is your chance to do it. Please call 1-888-805-6477. You can also support the exchange online at nhpr.org.
Join Gavin in Francistown, who says, listens every day. Erin in Hanover says it's part of her daily routine. Marianne in Henniker says her husband and her husband and her listen all the time. And Liz, actually a fellow alumni of mine at Emerson College in Holderness, Plymouth State University professor, says that calm and rational news reporting is important to her. Join all these people at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. We need your name and contact information, which, of course, we keep private. You can become a sustaining member using a credit card or a bank account. You can also make a one-time gift. This is your chance to support the exchange. We have $1,800 to raise here. We can do it with your support now. Make a pledge by calling 1-888-805-6477. You can also go online to make a secure pledge at nhpr.org. This is your chance to support the exchange, and thanks.
The Diane Rehm Show coming up on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from North Branch Construction, celebrating 55 years in business, from custom-built homes to eco-friendly commercial buildings on time, on budget. Find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and northbranch.net. And Plymouth State University hosting an information session November 6 in Concord to provide information on the university's graduate degree offer.